All right, after a week away, the Xbox 2 podcast is now live. I'm one of your hosts, Randall Thor 19, man with the million. And yes, the million stands for gamer score. So I always get that question every single time in one of my videos when I do that intro. Really? And with me at every single time. Because new people are finding the channel all the time and they hear that intro and they're like, well, million what, dollars? If I had $1 million, I probably wouldn't be doing YouTube. Just saying, I'd be enjoying life, traveling around the world.
Still be podcasting though, right?
Yeah, of course. I love podcasting. And I love podcasting with the other co-host here on Xbox 2. And that is the one and only Jez Corden of Windows Central. What's going on, buddy?
That was a nice segue.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was pretty good.
It was smooth, man. You're getting good at this podcasting thing.
Yeah, I've only been doing it for like 5 years, yeah.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I've been
TXR
doing
TXR and stuff, right?
I mean, okay, there's TXR for 90 episodes. I did a podcast with my buddies Magic, who now works at Xbox, and my other buddy DOA, called DRM, which we did for about 70 episodes. And then I did a podcast with Stallion83, who's just broke 2 million gamer score. It was called the Gamer Score Popcast. We did that from like 2011 to 2015.
My God, you're like legit
pro. Yeah, yeah. I still get people asking me about the GamerScore podcast and stuff and why it, you know, we want it to come back. It's like I always say, well, ask Stallion about it, but I haven't spoken to Stallion since 2016, so it's been a long time, but yeah.
Well, I'm honored that you podcast with little old me then.
Yes. Jez Corden. Wouldn't have it any other way. You know? I like the two-man dynamic here. I like just me and you having a conversation. It's a little bit different than most other podcasts out there, which is why I thought it was a little bit unique. But thank you guys for showing up here. I know it can be a little hectic with our schedules. Sometimes Jez is busy. Sometimes I can't do it. And, you know, if one of us can't do it, well, there really is no show. And today, both of our schedules aligned. It's Wednesday. We have a lot of stuff here to talk about. Jez is biting at the chomp, right? Is that an expression? I think it is. I don't know. Biting at the bit, yeah. To tell you guys about Resident Evil 2, because he finished it.
Well, I haven't fully finished it. I'm about 75... Passed halfway as scenario B.
Yeah.
Pretty much finished it.
So we'll talk about that because even I've played a little bit of it in the game played section. We're also going to be talking about all those Xbox 2 rumors and leaks that you might have heard about. You know, I did a video about it. Dealer Gaming did a video about it. A lot of people are running videos about it, but Jez, you know, he has some insight to some of these things, so we'll get Jez's opinion on a lot of this stuff to see if there might be some truth or if it more than likely is going to be fake. We're going to talk about Sea of Thieves dominating Twitch. What? Could Jez be right? Is Sea of Thieves 2019 PUBG? He was just a year away. He was just a year off. Right?
I swear to God, man. If that happens, I'm coming for people, man.
I'm coming for people. What else? EA doing what EA does, and that's destroying games, destroying companies. This time they canceled a Star Wars game again. Talk about that. We'll talk about greedy Activision selling people a dollar red dot sites and skins and Call of Duty Black Ops 4, but then, you know, of course, giving their new CFO a $20 million bonus. There's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. So as you guys file in here, do us a favor, hit that like button. It helps out the show tremendously. And you know, it actually does, Jez. Like, I don't think people realize how important likes are. And likes are completely free, right? You don't got to do super chat. You know, in the videos and the podcasts, like literally clicking that like button helps out more than you can possibly imagine. And you won't know that unless you actually do YouTube. Because likes and even dislikes to a certain extent show YouTube that the video has engagement. And that's what YouTube wants to see, is engagement. If you don't get likes, they don't promote your video. I know they're supposed to. They're supposed to send it out to your subs and your people that you know, hit that notification bell, right? But a lot of the times they don't. A lot of the times they judge how they're going to promote your video to your subscribers based on how well your last few videos did. And if your last few videos didn't do very well, in engagement-wise and watch time-wise, they tend not to send notifications out, which is, to me, kind of screwed up, don't you think? Like, people hit the subscribe button to see the content, but you're not letting them see the content because of how previous videos did. You know what I mean?
It's screwed up. We could do a whole podcast about how I feel about Google, but there it is.
Jay May says, I clicked it, quit whining, geez. I'm not whining, I'm just saying. Like, there's a reason when people say, hit the like button, it's free, it takes 2 seconds, because it actually legitimately truly helps more than most people realize. So yeah, what else? Yeah, hit the like button, share this out, you know, on Twitter, social media, more people in here. It's always a good time. But yeah, so Jez, games played, most important part of the podcast, in my opinion, because I don't know, to me, while it's great talking about all these news items and getting, you know, sales, our thoughts on them, if you don't play video games, what is the point? What is the point, in my opinion? Video games are the most important thing. I enjoy doing them, right? I enjoy playing them. I enjoy talking about them. It's why I have a YouTube channel in the first place. But you wouldn't believe how many people have told me that they don't want to hear about video games.
What?
They just dive into the news. I don't want to hear about video games. And I'm like, do you even play video? Like, to me, that's such a foreign concept. Like,
it's weird.
And that's the reason why I do what we've been playing first, because the games are the most important aspect of, you know, this whole situation. I wouldn't be doing a podcast if, like, I wasn't playing. If I was literally one of those people out there that didn't play anything and only beat one or two games a year, I'd be a fraud. I'd be a complete fraud on YouTube and these Twitter streets. I'd be ashamed to talk about stuff.
Like, I don't know if you saw IGN's Resident Evil 2 review drama, speaking of frauds.
Yeah, I know, right? Fraud. Jeez, they keep on screwing everything up, you know what I mean?
We should talk about that later, probably.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we talk about that.
What have you been playing then, man? What have you been playing? Because you typically have more variety than me. I don't know if it's just because you've got more time or just because I am get addicted to certain things, but I'm always interested to hear what you've been playing.
What have I been playing? Well, I have been patiently waiting for Resident Evil 2, right? Patiently waiting. So even though, like, I picked up Onimusha Warlords, right? I didn't really play it. I bought it more for nostalgic purposes. I wanted to have it because I do love the game. I was sitting there, I'm counting down the time, counting down the hours to I can get my hands in Resident Evil 2. So you're gonna hate me, and you're gonna put me in rehab. But I've been playing a lot of PUBG.
Oh, what a shocker! I never forget that podcast where you're like, "I'm done with PUBG, well, man. I am done with that game."
But the thing is during that whole, well, because during the fall when all those games came out, I didn't have time to play all those great games and also play PUBG. So it was like I played all those great games. Now we're in this section coming up here with really starting with Resident Evil 2 that it's a ton of games coming out in a short amount of time. So there's not going to be any time for PUBG, right? So yes, I played PUBG. I also played Absolver, which hit Xbox Game Pass.
It's about Absolver because it came out on PlayStation first, right? PlayStation and PC. Came to Xbox a little bit later.
Yes. A little bit later, almost 2 years later.
Well, yeah. I guess that's an understatement. But it seems polarizing, man. Like, some people hate it. Some people love it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it?
I'm kind of in the middle. I like aspects of it. I don't love the game, but I don't hate the game. It is unique. It is a very unique game. There's really nothing like it out there. The only real comparison I can draw to another game that's similar is something like For Honor. Yeah. It's a fighting game where you have this world that you go through and beat people up, and your goal is to like fight these bosses to get to the end, to open up this door to get to the end. But it's also a connected game. Sure, you can play it offline, but there's also other people playing, and you can team up with them, so you can play the whole game in co-op and help each other out, or the other people could actually fight you. But in reality, the campaign, which is only 3 hours long, is just a primer for the real game, which is the PvP, the 1v1 multiplayer or the 3v3 multiplayer. Right. The campaign is just kind of like a tutorial for that, because as you fight enemies, you learn their moves. You can incorporate their moves into your moveset because you have this like fighting deck, because you have four different stances, and each stance is kind of, it's tough to explain without video, but you have these fighting moves, and each one of these stances you can switch to have different combos, and you learned the combos by fighting other enemies and blocking and evading. So it's free on Game Pass. And that was why I'd be like, if you got Game Pass, don't buy the game because it's $30. You may not like it. Check it out on Game Pass, and you might enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like it came out in 2017 on the PlayStation. It's kind of like one of those things where it's like, I mean, a lot of the hype died around that game. I mean, it's great that it's finally coming to Xbox, but a little too late there. But other than that,
do you think it's a franchise that's got legs? Like, could a sequel improve on it, or do you think that's it?
I think that's it. I mean, I'm sure they could do some more. So I mean, I don't know. I don't really see there being an Absolver 2, to be honest with you. But shout out to Alex Wilson for the super chat. He says, thanks for the show, Random Jazz. You're my Thursday morning Xbox show here in Australia. Well, shout out to everybody in Australia. I know we do have some fans down there.
It's got crazy hot weather there right now. Like 45.
Yeah, years. It's crazy cold here, man. Like it's snowing. It's like five degrees Fahrenheit. It's cold here.
What's that in? What's that in real temperature numbers?
I don't know. You tell me. I don't know. I don't know.
America after its own temperature system, man.
But I've also been playing Resident Evil 2. I started that last night. But then you've also been playing Resident Evil 2.
I have.
So, what do you think about Resident Evil 2? I know you put out a review for it on Windows Central last night, or yesterday when the embargo broke. You gave it a 5 out of 5. It's high praise. What do you think about the game?
Well, first of all, this is going to be spoiler-free for anyone who hasn't played the original. But, you know, it was weird for me, right? I was so hyped for Resident Evil 2. It was one of the first games that I was truly hyped for as a kid. Like buying magazines. I remember buying magazines just to get every little piece of Resident Evil 2 information I could. And I'd never done that for a game before. I think I was 10 or 11 years old. I'd never done that for a game before. And Resident Evil 2 was the first. So it was kind of freaky to be now reviewing it in a, sort of like a pseudo-professional capacity. But you know, here we are, and it came out, and I had pretty high expectations for it. But honestly, I didn't expect it to be as perfect as it was. Like, for example, I'm really, really like Final Fantasy VII as well. It's one of my favorite games of all time. I thoroughly expect Square Enix to not deliver on that. Not only is it a hack and slash, but they're stripping out the open world. It's going to be episodic or something. So, like, I had, like, even though I'm still looking forward to it, I sort of keep my expectations in check because you have this assumption that maybe there's just some things that don't work nowadays or some things that they decide they need to strip out because they want it to appeal to modern gamers or whatever. No, Resident Evil isn't like that. They pretty much kept it exactly the same as the original. If you play on hardcore mode, you even have to use ink ribbons. There's no autosave. It plays just like the original, with the exception of you can actually turn. now. You know, so like it even borrows like Resident Evil 3's quick turn thing, which I don't think Resident Evil 2 had, if I remember correctly.
No, originally I don't think Resident Evil 2 had a quick turn. That was stuff added later.
It was either Code Veronica or Resident Evil 7 where they added like a quick turn thing. But you know, so the controls are upgraded, and obviously the aiming's upgraded. It's over the shoulder, more similar to Resident Evil 4 or the modern Resident Evil games. It uses the Resident Evil 7 engine, so it's got those like really great gore animations and the really great facial motion capture and all that sort of stuff. It's just like, it was just sublime, man. Like, they've changed, obviously, like, they've changed the order of where you find things. They've changed some of the areas a bit to make it fresh. They've sort of given some of the monsters a new spin. Like, I don't want to spoil the surprises, but some of the monsters in the old game that didn't make a lot of sense or didn't really fit that well in the overall lore. And because, like, I can go into the backstory on this, but some of the monsters from Resident Evil 2 originally were sort of like cut at the last minute from what they were meant to be, and then sort of but left in the game because they'd already implemented them. It's hard to explain without spoiling it. Maybe we can have like another conversation about Resident Evil 2 in a future podcast when more people have played the game. But it was just nostalgia, but also fresh, like shocking. Like, some of the new scenes they've added it to the story were like, oh my God, I can't believe they took it that place. Like, they do this bait and switch thing where they make you think parts of the game have been cut. And then you're like, oh, I'm disappointed now that part of the game's been cut. And then, like, later on in the game, it's like, oh no, it's there, but it's different and better. And it's just masterful, man. It was just like, I was delighted constantly while playing it. There was loads of new stuff. The horror was on point. You know, it's even got like this, you can buy like the nostalgic music, the music from the original game as an extra little microtransaction thing.
I did see that. That's pretty cool.
You can even purchase like the PS1 pixelated skins if you want them. Like,
Why would you though? I don't understand.
It's just a fun thing, right? Like Resident Evil Zero HD had this monetization where, and also Monster Hunter World, where it's like, yeah, okay, we've made this single player experience. It's got no upsell, but here's a load of skins if you want them, you know? So I thought that was, I think that's a cool sort of middle ground without sort of tacking on a multiplayer mode or whatever. But apparently they are adding some kind of like mercenaries style mode, like a raid mode to the game later on, like a time trial thing that's coming later on. So they do have some kind of post-launch plan for the game, but dude, I just loved it. The gore, the gunplay was great. The story was great. The new stuff was great. The old stuff was great. The only thing that I sort of little bit disappointed that I kind of wanted them to take more liberties with the story and change it more, maybe, I mean, improve it.
You can't really do that. Not in a reimagining of Resident Evil 2.
Yeah,
you know?
I know, but like for example, Resident Evil 1 Remake added Lisa Trevor, right? And Lisa Trevor in Resident Evil 1 Remake, she wasn't in the original, and she was like a pretty major addition to the story and the lore of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a really good way to expand on the sort of origins of the T-virus and all that sort of stuff. And I don't want to get too deep into the lore, especially I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't played, but I just sort of like, I kind of get the position they're in. They were like, we don't want to make it. We want to add some new stuff, and they have added some new stuff, but it feels like they didn't want to take too many liberties with the story. And as a result, it's sort of like, I just think I could have done more there, but I understand why they didn't at the same time. Some people would have been pissed. So
I started it up last night, and I've only played it for a few hours. I'm going to be digging into it tonight. Hopefully I can finish Leon's scenario tonight, because they give you the choice at the beginning. Who do you want to play as first, Leon or Claire? Just like, you know, the two disc on Resident Evil 2, depending on which one you put in first. And from the get-go, I was expecting a lot from this game, okay? It was my number two most anticipated for 2019. And people were like, it's Resident Evil 2. It's like, yeah, it's Resident Evil 2, but it's my favorite Resident Evil. It's also been a long time since I played it. It's been 20 years. Like, I haven't played Resident Evil 2 since I originally played it, so it's going to feel new. And when I got into it, it was just like, there's that feeling, like you mentioned, of nostalgia, but also like you're experiencing it for the first time, right? Not everything is the same. There are some changes. And even so, like when you go into the police station, you notice some things that you might remember, like, oh, I remember this. I remember this. But the enemies aren't in the same spot and things like that. So, and it's like updated for modern times, like with the controls and the graphics. It's, I'm so impressed. And I was already, my expectations were super high already. So, I can't wait to play more. I can't wait to finish it. I can't wait to go into Claire's section to see what she has to offer. Now,
apparently, there is... I mean, we were lucky enough to have two codes. So, like, we had a PlayStation code and a Xbox code. I haven't got to these parts yet, but apparently Claire's story gets really, really emotional. So,
yeah, I haven't gotten to Claire's yet. I started as Leon. I will say the one drawback that I've noticed... I love the fact that the game is very cinematic now, right? A lot of cutscenes, a lot of action. That's really cool. They're going for a very cinematic storytelling. However, the dialogue is absolutely horrible. The dialogue between Leon and Claire is god-awful. The dialogue between most people is cringy at best.
It's still Resident Evil, you know.
It's
kind of like almost self-referential in some sense. I feel like, on the one hand, I hope they kept it cheesy because they thought, well, the original was cheesy, so let's keep it cheesy. But I also can't help but think, like, this is one area where Capcom just doesn't seem to invest that much in. Like, Monster Hunter World has lame dialogue too. Like, as well, and Resident Evil 7 has pretty cheesy dialogue as well. And I think it's somewhere they don't invest that much. And maybe this is somewhere where they can improve to some degree, but it was passable. It wasn't terrible.
I mean, yeah, I get it. Like Buddy Boy in chat says, check out Resident Evil 1 original dialogue, classic cheese. I get it. Resident Evil always had like cheesy element, but the thing is, like, everything else in the game is immaculate. The production values are insane. It's just weird to go from, you know, great controls, great graphics, you know, the presentation, everything the game offers, to just kind of like corny ass dialogue, man. It just doesn't kind of fit with the you know, the presentation they're going for. So yeah,
I think that's the best way of putting it. It's jarring because everything else is so good, and it's like, why is this still like this? You can play one cool thing about it that often isn't in Japanese games ported to the West or whatever. You can play it with the Japanese dialogue, which kind of like, in a way, limits the impact of the American voice acting. It isn't terrible, but it's also not great. When you can't understand what they're saying, it's a little bit easier to swallow.
The game is X-enhanced. It runs at 60 frames, and it seems pretty damn solid on the X. Although, it's supposed to be 60 frames on all consoles. I did watch a breakdown. It does not hold, 60 on the base Xbox One or the base PS4. I mean, on the Xbox One, it drops pretty good, but I haven't noticed a frame drop. On my OLED, it looks phenomenal. Like, I didn't really notice much difference because I tried it out without HDR and with HDR, and I didn't really notice that big of a difference. Unlike a game like Sea of Thieves, where the difference is ridiculous. But it's still a good looking game. But the IGN thing, Jez. IGN. Oh, yes. IGN. Oh, my God, have they, like... They've really torpedoed their credibility in recent months. So they put out their Resident Evil 2 review, and I sent it to you, right? I was like, Jez, look at this. They had to retract most of it because the reviewer didn't know how to access the scenario B for the other character and accidentally play through the same scenario but with the other character, right?
It's annoying because I feel like Capcom probably even thought, okay, there's a potentiality here for people to not understand how this works. Obviously, if you played the original, you know that's exactly how it works in the original. You play through as Leon, and you play through as Claire, or you play through as Claire, and you play through as Leon, experiencing their intersecting, interweaving path through the game. That scenario A has slightly different characters and enemies, the scenario B, and slightly different areas and slightly different weapons and all that sort of stuff. So that's the way it works in the original, and that's the way it works in Resident Evil 2. And at the end of scenario A, when you complete the game, it actually pops up with an explanation saying, this is what you need to do to get scenario B, and this is what you need to do now, experience a new nightmare. But IGN's reviewer missed that, apparently. Wasn't aware of how it works in the original. And then he kind of based all the negativity about the game in his review was based around the idea that he couldn't figure out how to get to scenario B.
Yeah.
And people noticed, and
No, and the funny thing is he originally gave the game an 8.8, right? Even though he was really upset about this, the scenario B and not being able to do it, how it was the same. Now, apparently, scenario B, when you do play it, the beginning's different and the end's different, but most of the stuff towards the middle is the same as the other person. So it's not that big of a difference, apparently, from like how Resident Evil 2 was originally. But then they only increased the score by 0.2. Like, I don't get it. So, like, half the game is only worth 0.2? I don't understand that. I don't understand, like, I'm gonna increase this by 0.1 or 0.2. It's like, what? But anyways, but it's just another thing in a long string of bad decisions at IGN. You had the Ace Combat review last week, where the guy played the entire game on novice controls, which is like the worst way to play that game, right? And he got called out for it. Not to mention the whole plagiarism scandal last year with Dead Cells. It's like IGN has literally become a joke. I think we talked about in the podcast before, is like, I don't really follow a lot of the big news organizations. Yeah. Like, they'll drop news first, which is great because, you know, I talk a lot about news here on the channel. But I couldn't care less about any of those guys and what they think about games, because you get situations
This is the thing you say about game reviews, written editorial game reviews. They don't make any money. So, like, from a business perspective, you don't put your best writers on game reviews. I'm lucky to be in a position where I can write about whatever I want. And I wrote my Resident Evil 2 review knowing full well it wasn't going to make return on investment or all the time that I put in it. But I wrote it because I wanted to write it. And I am lucky that I'm one of the rare writers in this industry that is able to do that. But IGN seems to have put all of its high-quality editorial staff, like the sort of veterans, a lot of them pivoted to video, so like in general. The good writers and the good producers are pretty much doing the video stuff now. And honestly, that's where people want their news now. So it's kind of like, I understand the position they're in, where it's like, how do you monetize editorial when everyone's using ad blockers now?
That's true.
Everyone's sort of put their quality writers over onto YouTube to produce YouTube content, and, you know, some of the IGN videos are great, and some of the, you know, their written previews and stuff are really good, but reviews don't make any money. So from a business perspective, maybe that's where it fell by the wayside. So I don't know the name of the writer who wrote that article or whatever.
He's been a dude who's been working at IGN for like 18 years. He's been there a long time.
Okay, well, I'll shut my mouth then.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, it's like, oh boy, IGN. So yeah, that's Resident Evil 2. I'll have a review out whenever I finish both scenarios. Maybe I'll start up a hardcore, because there's three different difficulties you can select. You got the standard difficulty. There's easy, which features like regenerating health. The zombies are less aggressive, and you there's checkpoints in the game, because on standard you have to find a typewriter. The zombies do take a lot of bullets to kill, though. And then hardcore is, you know, you need to an ink ribbon to save. I think what else is there?
So basically, the way it works is on easy, you've got auto save and regenerating health.
Yeah,
and it's way too easy.
Yeah,
and then on normal, you've got no auto aim. You don't have you have regenerating health above yellow caution.
But, yes,
I think. But like, if you get to red caution or danger, then you have to use health, and you also have auto saves, and the zombies take less bullets. On hardcore, the zombies take tons of bullets, so you pretty much have to be more strategic with how you shoot. Basically, you want to shoot a zombie to stun them and then run past them more likely than actually kill them, because it's just going to chew for all your bullets.
Yeah.
And also, there's no auto saves. Have to use ink ribbons, which means you take up an inventory slot if you want to save the bloody game, like it was back in the day. And what else? There's no auto saves, and everything's harder. Blah blah.
Yep.
Blah. So also, I want to add one more thing.
Okay.
Scenario B is actually harder as well.
Ooh.
Like on scenario B, they seem to like make everything slightly harder. For example, the tyrant dude. He runs way faster in scenario B than he does in scenario A. I don't know why. Like he's just more angry in scenario B.
He's just you beat me in scenario A. Now I'm time to beat you up in scenario B. But yeah. So Resident Evil.
More determined.
Resident Evil 2 launches Thursday night at midnight. Come out Friday. We'll talk probably. You know, like I said, I have a review. We'll probably go into more detail next week. But I just wanted to give you guys a little taste of the greatness that does await you on Friday if you're a fan of Resident Evil 2. But moving on, I wanted to talk about Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves.
And the resurgence that Sea of Thieves has seen on Twitch. People,
are you telling me that Sea of Thieves is 2019's PUBG?
I don't know. You're the one that tweeted it out last year. You know, there are people that use that... screenshot of that tweet and use that against you as ammo all the time. Like, look what Jess Corden said, this fool, back last year. He thought Sea of Thieves was going to be good and have content. What a loser.
What a loser.
But I saw Polygon ran an article yesterday talking about how Sea of Thieves has seen this like resurgence on Twitch, right? Yeah. And it's true. Like, Summit's playing it, and he's like, every time he streams it now, he's got the highest stream, right? The users watching him. And then, wouldn't you know? Because let me tell you guys something. I predicted this nights ago. I said, the way this YouTube and Twitch stuff works is that everybody watches everybody else's stuff. And they see what is working for somebody else. And they copy it. They try to jump on the bandwagon. You'll notice that a lot here, just in this small YouTube community, somebody will put out a video and then somebody else will put out the same video with the same title, trying to jump on it, right? But in Twitch, it's also the same, because all these guys are looking for more viewers, more subs, more money, right? So currently, you know, when PUBG blew up, everybody jumped on PUBG. You know, when Blackout blew up, everybody was on Blackout. When Fortnite blew up, everybody was on Fortnite. They're all looking for that easy views and easy money, right? But then something weird happened. Summit started playing Sea of Thieves, and he actually really enjoys the game. He doesn't play it like how Rare wants you to play. He doesn't play it like everybody who has been playing Sea of Thieves the past 5 months has been playing the game. Very courteous, you know, very respectful to other people. He plays it like a pirate. He gets on people's ships. He hides. And then, at the right moment, he reveals himself and kills everybody and steals their loot, like a pirate should. Right? But I said to all my buddies, I was like, they all notice Summit out there blowing his channel up. Sea of Thieves blowing his channel up. Him getting all these subs. He went from like 18,000 paid subscribers to 42,000 paid subscribers by playing Sea of Thieves. Right? And all these guys notice. So what happened? All of a sudden, Dr. Disrespect is streaming it. Tim the Tat Man is streaming it. And then Ninja is streaming it.
Ninja? Oh, wow. But Rand, I heard Microsoft paid for all this.
No, they... look, if Microsoft...
I saw these tweets, man. I saw these tweets and recent error threads. Microsoft paid for this.
Right. Well, those people are idiots. Because here's the thing. If you're getting paid by a company, Ninja or Dr. Disrespect or Summit or all these guys are getting paid, they have to disclose that they are getting paid by somebody for a sponsor stream. They have to include the hashtag ad. Otherwise, it's a crime. They can get in big trouble. So if you don't see that stuff, it's not paid for. And Microsoft, to the best of my knowledge, and I've talked to a few people behind the scenes, they ain't paying for this. The reason why everybody's doing it is because they see what Sea of Thieves did for Summit, and they are chasing that glory like they've chased everything else on Twitch. Like I just explained it. PUBG popular, everybody plays PUBG. Fortnite popular, everybody plays Fortnite. No surprise to me that all of a sudden Ninja's playing Sea of Thieves and talking about getting into it, right? So
that's weird, man.
I mean, it is what that's it is. Weird to it me. Is what it is. But then you start seeing it's weird because it's seeing this resurgence, all these people playing it on Twitch, all the people watching it. You have the people that were playing it for the last 5 months or since launch. They're upset. They're pissed off with all these new players playing. They're gatekeeping. You know, they're putting out stuff there like, who was happier with Sea of Thieves before these streamers came in, right? They're like, this is horrible. Sea of Thieves was so much better before. Now, granted, a lot of these Sea of Thieves streamers are playing on PC. Some of them use that double gun exploit of being able to kind of like shoot one gun and quickly switch to another to shoot that. A lot of the Xbox players are upset that they have to play with PC, that there's no option to disable crossplay. But
that's one reason I don't play.
Yeah.
I got ganked by a guy who's blatantly using a mouse. And I just thought, nah. I don't
know. But it's like, the game's growing and you want the game to continue getting free updates, like you want the game to be visible on Twitch. So like, while more people might be playing like a pirate, which, hello, it's let me get my thoughts straight here. The fact that people get upset when someone plays the game as a pirate to steal your loot and complain about it is mind-boggling to me. It's a game about pirates. It's called Sea of Thieves for a reason. So if you get a whole bunch of loot and some other pirate comes by and sinks your ship and steals your shit, too bad, so sad. I have the world's smallest violin for you. It's part of the game. I don't get it, man. Jazz, you got anything to add on this thing?
I mean, I don't know why anyone would gatekeep that sort of stuff. If like big Twitch streamers play Sea of Thieves regularly, that's the best thing that could happen for the game. Because even if like it doesn't, even if it doesn't lead to like more people playing the game outwardly, what that does is tell Microsoft that the game has legs and that it's worth continuing to support. So clearly, there is something about Sea of Thieves. I don't play the game. I don't really like the game. But clearly, there's something about it because it just won't go away, you know?
Yep. I mean, they got the arena update coming out. I did see Cloberl on Twitter say that there is an Inside Xbox planned for February 5th, where also like the Rare is going to be there detailing the next update and what's, you know, coming in the future for Sea of Thieves. I find this so situation just weird. Like, everybody's streaming the game. You know, I mean, you would have swore, like, back in March, like, people were like, the game's garbage. And now it's, like, the most popular thing on Twitch. It's so weird to see this happen. It's so incredibly weird.
I bet Microsoft are kicking themselves for not having any monetization in the game yet.
Well, I think that's actually smart of them because, like, I know they wanted to sell pets and all this stuff, but I think it's been smart of them to not have any monetization, you know, unless of course they're losing money on, I don't know. Like, it looks better for them that they've done all this free stuff and improved the game, adding more content instead of like, let's make a quick buck selling, you know, pets. Because in this next story I wanted to talk about, Call of Duty, like, they're selling red dots for $1 and targeting reticles for $2. And giving their CFOs a $15 million bonus, but then going to Blizzard and telling them, you need to cut costs on this stuff. Not only do you need to cut costs on all your games, but you have to make more games. And what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I want to defend Activision.
You're going to wait, hold on one second.
You heard me right.
Before you defend Activision, Cyrus Burke has a super chat. He's talking about Sea of Thieves. He says, from what I saw, the hardcore Sea of Thieves community is angry at this resurgence due to the influx of toxic players that negatively affect the game via exploits, possibly cheaters, not playing like a pirate. Yeah, I mean, we mentioned the double gun stuff is a thing that they're patching out. But thanks for the super chat. Now, Jez, please defend Activision, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like, are they paying you for this?
God, I wish. But I saw this whole thing about the dude getting the $15 million bonus, and like, it pissed me off, right? I saw Jim Sterling's tweet. He's like, rah, 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 $15 bonus. And then I saw like 5,000 retweets or wherever it got. And everyone's angry. I was angry too. I hate Activision. They, you know, downsized Heroes of Storm. It's one of my favorite games to play. So I am a fan of Activision. However, Rand, there was no $15 million bonus.
No, there wasn't. People lied. The media lied to us.
It was, in fact, performance-based stock bonus, which is not cash, which you can't use to cash flow a game. So saying like they're cutting Blizzard down but giving another dude the cash, that's not strictly true, because you can't pay devs in stock, right? That was a stock incentive, not cash. So that was let's just be clear on that point. However, Activision still sucks and they're scummy and I hate them. And I hate what they're doing to Blizzard, and I hate Call of Duty being bad, and the fact that, you know, we talked about this on the last show, I think. Like, it boggles my mind that Call of Duty still doesn't have like true dedicated servers, you know. For all this time, we're still on this awful peer hosted stuff. And another thing I've noticed that both EA and Activision are doing actually now, they're not putting microtransactions in the game until after a few yes. weeks after launch, because
they're smart.
To avoid the backlash.
Yes.
Have you noticed that Battlefield 5, Battlefield 5 premium currency recently showed up at retail?
I did see that. Sneaky,
they're,
sneaky.
That's sneaky.
Dude, they don't put the microtransactions in during the review phase. And then they add it months later, so people can't talk about the microtransactions in their reviews. It's very sneaky, very smart, but also very underhanded by these companies. Mm-hmm. Very shady. Like, even though we knew all this stuff was coming, it's like they're not going to put it out there until everybody's done reviewing Black Ops 4, right? Like, how different would the reviews be if when all these companies were reviewing Black Ops, and they're like, oh, by the way, they're selling a red dot for a buck. Which,
I tell you, it's even worse in Call of Duty Black Ops, because if I'm understanding it right, I'm sure someone in chat will correct me if I'm wrong, but the way it works, at least sometimes the way it works in Black Ops 4, is that you can unlock some of these, time gated cosmetics. But you only unlock all of them if you unlock the whole set. And if you run out of time, you don't unlock the whole set in time. You can basically buy them before the timer runs out. So it's kind of like really badly incentivizing people to choose between having wasted all their time and not getting the reward, or spending the extra bit to get the reward that they'd spent time trying to get but ran out of time. Do you know what I'm saying? Am I being clear?
Well, so like, so Javier has a question in chat. He says, selling a red dot buy for a buck makes the game less entertaining, question mark. Like, I don't think it makes it less entertaining. It's just some people don't like being cash cows. You know what I mean? It's a red dot. Why not just have it as part of an unlock? Why have it for a sell it for a dollar? Is money that important to you where like this red dot literally cost a dollar? You know what I mean? Like it's insane.
I sort of like, I've had this question before, and it's like, why would you complain about cosmetic DLC and stuff? It's not the implementation of cosmetic DLC for me, or adding it, rather. It's not the fact that they're adding.
Uh-oh. I think Jez went bye-bye there. Yeah, so I guess I'll fill the air until Jez comes back. I think he might have dropped out or something, but... Some guy in chat says, just don't buy it. Problem solved. Javier says, you aren't cash cow if you don't buy it. Cake Batter says, everyone expected this and cheerfully bought the game. I'm not sure why the complaints. And that is true.
Can you hear me?
Okay, now you're back. Yeah, that is true. That I mean, Cake Batter brings up a good point. Everybody knew about this. Everybody expected it. Everybody bought the game. Not sure why they're complaining. Now, that is true. Like, I fully expected there to be microtransactions in Call of Duty Black Ops 4. I didn't buy it because there wasn't a single player. So, they put out the reviews, and it's a fun game, and it's got, like, the highest rated Call of Duty game, and then 5 months later, whatever it is, here come the microtransactions, and they're scummy. According to a lot of people, they're, like, the worst microtransactions Call of Duty's ever seen. And it's like, some people would be like, if I had known about this at launch, I wouldn't have bought it. Some people are like, if they were here at launch, this would have affected the score of my review. So, like, kind of how we were talking about earlier, how these microtransactions aren't in the game at launch because publishers know they'll negatively impact their review scores. But yeah, a lot of people do know going in that it's going to have microtransactions. And quite frankly, I think most people are fine with microtransactions. I think that's obvious. Like, especially with how Fortnite does theirs. But go ahead, Jez. Continue what you were saying before you got cut out.
I don't know what happened there. My computer froze up for a split second and it disconnected my microphone. But basically what I was saying was it's not the fact that they add microtransactions. It's the way they're implemented. Like in Shadow of War, for example, the game has accelerators, which lets you skip content. That's fine, right? But the problem is it felt like they artificially padded out the end game to sort of incentivize you to buy these accelerators. Not only that, but they put adverts for the accelerators in the pause menu. Now, I don't know about everyone else, and people have different susceptibilities to microtransactions and wasting money. I'm the kind of person who sometimes struggles to not waste money. You know, I am the kind of person who will waste money on a loot box or whatever. Like, I've spent an obscene amount on stuff in Overwatch, for example. And you can argue that, yeah, maybe that's my problem. And, yeah, you know, it totally is. My lack of willpower or whatever, like, and stuff like that. But the thing is, luckily enough, I can afford it. I can afford to waste money on microtransactions and stuff like that. But for people who are sort of, like, they're susceptible to that sort of stuff and they don't have the willpower, but they also can't afford it, It's kind of like a slippery slope. It just feels scummy. You know, when you open up a pause menu and there's an advert there. I don't know about you guys, but I play games to relax a lot. And, you know, one of the reasons why I don't watch TV is because there's adverts all over it. And I realize that's how they monetize it, but I don't relax when I'm having an ad shoved in my face. And that's why, like, people use ad blockers, you know. If ads were okay with people, then they probably wouldn't use ad blockers, you know? And it goes beyond that, the whole ad blockers thing, because then you start getting into the slippery slope aspect where the developer's like, okay, we'll do cosmetic DLC this time, we'll do pay to win next time. And then, like, gradually over the years, we eventually get to a point where games just become corrupted. And you've got, like, a whole generation of kids growing up thinking, like, mobile phone style pay to win microtransactions are completely fine, and that's the world they've grown up in. you know, and World of Tanks, for example, is a super popular game, free to play. And the fact that it's free, fair enough, but the game is also pretty much pay to win. You know, you have like these brackets separate, you're separated by bracket of how powerful your tanks are, but there's always someone with the more powerful tank in your bracket, and chances are they're paid for that tank.
Yeah.
So, you know, and fair enough, it's a free to play game, but that could so easily slip into premium games too. You know, we saw it with Battlefront 2, for example, and great, there was a huge backlash against it. But, you know, eventually one company will be subtle enough and scummy enough that they'll figure out a way of pushing it through the slippery slope without anyone noticing. Like, for example, a few weeks or months after launch, you know, and like everyone else has moved on and the news cycle's moved on something else, you know. It's a slippery slope, and that's why people don't like it.
It is a slippery slope. But I mean,
Walkers make DLC. If it funds like really good content post launch, and like a developer has earned the respect of its fans to like put, and you know, they've demonstrated that they will reinvest that money in the game rather than extra yachts for their executives and $15 million bonuses and stuff like that, then fine. I'm totally for it. If they show that it's, you know, the money they're using is for a pro consumer reason, then that's completely cool. But
yeah,
a lot of companies just don't do that. I don't know.
All right, so I wanted to talk now about, like, because the microtransaction stuff, it's like some people are very much like, yo, I don't like it, I don't buy it, I don't care that it's there, and I get it, right? Some people are like, I'm fine with it, I don't have a lot of time, so I'll buy it because it helps me, you know, like the Assassin's Creed stuff. There is a strong like vocal segment of gamers that don't like it, but then there's clearly the market has responded positively and people don't seem to like it. So it's like you always kind of get like two different camps on this. The ones who are like, this is egregious and horrible, and the others are like, I don't see a problem with it. You know, I guess it like people had a problem with the Battlefront 2 microtransactions and loot boxes, mainly because it was a loot box and it was like almost like a mobile structure where like you got character was like made better with like perks in a competitive game, which kind of, you know, people rallied against. But it's always an interesting conversation, and you know, I figured, you know what, let's move on and let's talk about the Xbox 2 rumors and leaks. So I see we have like 410 people watching. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you hit that like button, we would greatly appreciate it. Now, Jez, I'm sure you've seen a lot of this speculation hit recently about next generation Xbox, next generation PlayStation 5. It's not just one, it's both, right? They're both coming relatively soon. You know, the PS5 CPU supposedly leaked. I did a video about that. But we're more like, even though we deal with a lot of, you know, everything in the video game industry, we do kind of, you know, more look at it from the Xbox perspective of things. So I wanted to get your takes on these recent Xbox 2 rumors and stuff. Now, there was that Reddit leak, which was taken down, which everybody has kind of ran with, which I did a video about. It talked about, and let me actually get the sheet up here so I can actually read it to you instead of trying to draw it from my memory. So, two consoles, right? Now, he called the one the next Xbox streaming console, Lockhart, which obviously it's not streaming, right? Lockhart is not a streaming console, so that's wrong already, right, Jez?
Yep.
Lockhart, okay.
100% definitely not a streaming console.
100% not a streaming console. He has it at $250. I think it's too early in the game to lock down price. I don't think Microsoft knows the prices of these consoles yet. Would that be a fair thing to say, Jez?
I would say so, yep. I don't think they know the price. They don't know how, you know, it all depends on, there's a this huge chain of events determine how much a console is going to be. So,
right. So he says the Lockhart SKU is going to have, CPU is going to have 8 cores, 16 threads, Zen 2 CPU with a custom Navi GPU at 4 teraflops, 12 gigs of DDR6 memory, 1 terabyte SSD storage, with DirectX ray tracing. But then the Anaconda SKU is going to be $500, and it also has a custom 8-core, 16-thread Zen 2 CPU with the custom Navi GPU at 12 teraflops, so an 8 teraflop difference, 16 gigabytes of memory, another 1 terabyte SSD for storage and ray tracing. He says that both those consoles will launch holiday of 2020. The next Xbox XDK will roll out in April, May of this year. Both consoles will have heavy customized CPU and GPU, and both will support ray tracing with the XR. You'll start to see more about these things around GDC, and that the next Xbox will be fully backwards compatible with the Xbox One and also the 360 and the OG. What is your take on all that stuff? Is that wishful thinking? Is some things might be right? Is it just kind of like rumors kind of compiled together by somebody? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you always have to take these things with a pinch of salt. Like, a lot of this information is already out there. We know for a fact pretty much that it's going to be backwards compatible with the Xbox One. I know that for a fact. Phil Spencer's heavily hinted at it too. And Microsoft's put its stamp on backwards compatibility, so you can pretty much guarantee that the next Xbox will be backwards compatible. Also, I've also heard that storage, load speeds, and stuff like that is also a focus. So maybe the SSD stuff is true as well. I heard there was going to be some kind of software solution as well, in addition to that. But again, it's like really sort of weak kind of rumor, that one. So I don't know about that one. The thing that made me a bit iffy on it was the fact that originally this leak came along with a dev kit leak codenamed Dante. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know if it's the same leak, but I don't think that Dante thing is real, which made me question whether the whole thing was real.
Interesting. So what was so the Dante, Xbox Dante, was the name of the dev kit, right?
Apparently, like when I first saw this leak, these specs, it also came with this Xbox Dante, which is supposedly the dev kit, but I've got reason to believe that dev kit bit isn't true, which made me question whether the rest of it was true. So ultimately, I don't know. And I can't say if it's real or not. I guess nobody really can, but I'm a sort of like, I don't know, on the stuff we don't know, like the CPU and the stuff like that. I mean, ray tracing is probably a given because it's the new hotness in graphics or whatever. But I'm sort of like 50-50 on it right now in terms of validity.
So Joshua Bethel in chat says, Brad Sam said Dante was real.
Oh, really? Well,
supposedly. I don't know. But also, there was somebody else came out today, and I saw WCCF Tech ran an article about this because it was in Reset Era. This guy came out and said that the hardware stuff is partially true. The storage stuff is 100% true. So the SSD stuff. Ray tracing is true. Lockhart is not the streaming Xbox. The Xbox system on a chip code name is Anubis. Check AMD's plan. Microsoft AI is not part of the hardware. In other words, never heard of TPU or SIC. How to implement ray tracing, see GDC 2019. Why they made a decision like Lockhart, see GDC 2019. Why there's still no dev kits after GDC 2019. So then you have, you know, like I said, you have this guy who's a supposed insider confirming at least some of that spec leak that we were talking about. Now, I do have to mention, there are people I get DMs all the time, right? People ask me to make videos about stuff. People ask me like, oh, did you hear this? How true is this? And, you know, I got a whole bunch of DMs recently about, someone said that they, there was an interview with some developer who said that, you know, they already had Xbox dev kits, Xbox 2 dev kits in their hands already. And, you know, I got a whole bunch of questions like, Rand, is this true? And I can't find the info for it. So I think whoever you heard it from, is literally lying to you. I think that person who ever said that, because I'm not sure who it was. That someone, I don't know, because I get a lot of DMs from people giving me information, asking me questions. Is this true? Is this not true? And apparently somebody was going around saying that there was this developer who in an interview said that he already had Xbox 2 dev kits, Anaconda and Lockhart dev kit stuff. But I can't find any of the information about it. I can't find an interview from anybody from any company talking about having dev kits for Xbox 2 already. So I'm going to say that the person who's telling you that is more than likely 100% lying. Because if there was an interview, it would be all over the place, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Sometimes when you hear things, you got to check the source. You know, if you see a YouTuber saying one thing and he says there's a source, but there's no source in the description, then I would highly doubt it that he's telling you the truth. Always look for a source. Always double check everything you hear on the internet. Never just assume what somebody's telling you is the truth. You know, the way everything is now, people will lie to just get views and money and everything. So be careful. Oh,
I thought you said someone was lying to me.
No, I'm not lying to you. I'm just saying lying in general. Like, because I get so many questions every single day about stuff.
That's what I heard. I heard that the dev kits hadn't gone out.
Right. I mean, I had heard that. I think some of the partners know what they're aiming at, but I'm not sure anybody has dev kits.
See,
yet.
The CEOs of third parties have the information.
Yeah, probably. So I just want to let that know. Let anybody who's, you know, asking me about it, you know, hey, I think you're being lied to, and that's one of the things here at the channel. Like, I'm never going to do. I don't lie to people. I always have a source when I make videos. Unless of course it's my own opinion. So that's why, like, if you like, you know, gaming news and opinions and stuff that is going to be truthful, I always say, you know, subscribe to the channel. It helps out. You know, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. But I'm never going to lie to anybody, because I'm not in this for views and I'm not in this for money. I don't need to make, you know, 5 videos a day to meet some quota. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Either way, I'm. Now, there was this other part that I wanted to talk about according to this leak. And look, while hardware talk is cool, seeing what this other stuff is, I'm more interested in the game aspect of stuff, right? I want to know what am I going to be playing on these next gen hardware, because the hardware is just the hardware. And I trust Microsoft enough to know that I think they'll get it right with the Anaconda and the Lockhart, considering how great the X is, right? If they didn't do the X, I'd be a little bit more worried, because they did the Xbox One OG, which was a terrible system. God, what a horrible system that was, right? But this guy also talked about studio buyouts, which is always interesting, because studios make games. And Jez, I'm going to give you a rundown of the studios that he says Microsoft is in current negotiations with, okay? So, you ready for this?
Go.
Asbo Studio, IO Interactive, Platinum Games, Turtle Rock Studios, Blue Point Games, Relic Entertainment, and The Farm 51. And he says also a few more. There are studios from the UK, France, Germany, Poland, Ukraine, Finland, Canada, Japan, Korea. Microsoft wants great talent and diversity around the world, but they don't have a target number. Huh?
Say Ukraine.
Yes, Ukraine. Hmm. So, anything in there out of those names there stick out to you?
Well, I'd be shocked if Platinum Games is true.
I would be shocked as well.
I would be stunned and just mind blown, frankly. But the fact that they've got Platinum Games in there makes me think the whole list is fake.
You think the whole thing's fake?
Well, it's kind of like, why would, like, it sounds like someone's wish list again.
It does, doesn't it? It does sound like an Xbox fan's wish list of, or just like a collection of rumors that he heard at Reset Era or something, right?
Yeah, I don't think Platinum Games I don't think that Platinum Games thing is even vaguely remotely in the realm of possibility, given what I'm at.
Blue Point, though, is interesting, though. Blue Point is, you know, a studio that has ties to Sony. They've done some games for them, remasters. Cloverill did say that there was that developer that had ties to them. Relic Entertainment, they make, like, you know, Warhammer and stuff. Ion Interactive, we know, has had some problems. You know, Hitman 2 didn't sell well. And yeah, but I do look at this and just, I kind of see it as, like, this is the wish list. I'm not saying, I do think Microsoft is in active talks with a lot of developers. Would you agree on that?
So they say.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so those are like the recent leaks and rumors regarding the Xbox 2. Seems like ray tracing is going to be in. Seems like the storage stuff might be true. The specs and what the like teraflops are going to be. You know, is it really 12 teraflops for the Anaconda? Is it really 4? Does that seem a little bit low to you, Jez? 4 teraflops for the Lockhart, 12 for the Anaconda? Like, would you expect... Does it seem low?
I would think, yeah. I'm not sure what the mentality is with having the Lockhart that less powerful than the X.
Well, so they can sell it cheaper, you know? Like, if you're trying to, like... If the
would that be an updated S, and then you'd have the X as
I would imagine this is the replacement for the X. Like this comes out and the X gets discontinued, and then you know what I mean. Like because I'm like let's just say so the X has 6 teraflops of GPU power, right? But also has a shitty CPU and it also has an old GPU, right? So then you have a
really problematic operating system.
Yeah, so then you come with next gen. Well, now Lockhart has a Zen 2 CPU, which is way better than the old Jaguar CPU that the X has. Yeah, it might have less overall GPU power with, say, 4 teraflops or 5 teraflops instead of 6, but also has a more modern GPU, a Navi, instead of, I think, the Polaris that the X had. So even though... it would have less teraflops, it potentially could be performing way better at a cheaper price point, you know, because like if the goal here is PlayStation 5 is one SKU and that SKU is $400 and we have a premium Xbox at $500, like there's, you got to make the cheaper SKU. You got to pull some stuff out to make it cheap, right? Or to at least undercut PlayStation 5 a bit. So I think there might be some truth to that. I think the Lockhart SKU may not have as many teraflops as the X if it's trying to come in at $300. You know what I mean?
Certainly possible.
But, I mean, that would put Microsoft at next gen and be like, here's a 1080p 60 machine that'll do 1080p, you know, 60 in all games this upcoming gen. And then we have one that's going to do 4K 60. Which obviously, if you want to pay for it, you can. Or you can play games on your mobile phone, streaming it. Or you can play games on your PC, you know what I mean? Seems like they're trying to like...
going to be everywhere, streaming to PC, you know, maybe even natively on PC.
Well, that's the other thing. So
stuff turns out to be true.
Satya Nadella, I always screw up his last name, he said that he really wants Xbox to be the Netflix of gaming, and they talk about Game Pass. How important is Game Pass and xCloud to the future of Xbox, Jez?
Well, the thing is about his Netflix comparison kind of shows like his lack of understanding about where Xbox is right now. I think for Xbox to become the Netflix of gaming, it needs to have the content. You know, I can turn on Netflix and there's like dozens of high quality exclusive content that you can watch. Like I've just started watching this cooking show called The Final Table. And I ain't really into cooking shows, but it's really good. You know? And it's there's just always something to watch on Netflix. The same is not true about Xbox. There's not always high quality exclusive content on Xbox that really makes the comparison to Netflix adequate, I would say. Now
that is true.
That is why, though, They bought so many damn studios. And, you know, if they are trying to be Netflix, then it's ultimately the quality that needs to be upped, because the technology's there. And, like, no one's worried about Xbox's technology. No one. You know, I ain't in the slightest bit worried anymore that, like, the next Xbox will have a Red Ring of Death or something like that. You know, I've been using Surface devices for years now, and they've all been great. The Xbox One S and the Xbox One X have just been pretty much flawless for me. I ain't in the slightest bit worried about their engineering prowess. You know? But it's them games, man. It always comes back to the games, and it's like, can they deliver on the games? And I still ain't that confident that they can really get it to that sort of level where it needs to be. You know?
Okay, there's gonna be
loads of great AA games. You know, I'm a big fan of Wasteland, man. You know, I know you are.
Oh my god, you guys should see my DMs when they announced In Exile. Jez was like, "This is the biggest thing for me. Oh my god!" Like, he was so excited for that.
I love classic Fallout, and I love that Wasteland 2 is basically the real Fallout 3, you know. And In Exile has, like, a really passionate fan base amongst people who like those kind of games. But I'm also not delusional enough to think that those kind of turn-based CRPGs are, like, the big heavy hitters that are going to compete with God of War, you know. You'd have to be delusional to think that. And you'd also have to be delusional to think that a huge quantity of those AA games is enough to compete with the God of Wars of the world. You know, they need to have those AA games to fill in the gaps. Like, Netflix has its AA shows, right? In between,
yeah, like, it has
Stranger
some...
Things and, yeah. And, you know, House of Cards before Kevin Spacey went weird. Oh well, he was always weird before we found out that he went weird, shall we say? And Netflix has its flagship shows and its AA shows that you watch in between the AAA shows, but Microsoft ain't got a huge amount of AAA shows, and that's where it needs to get the studios to.
So I'm going to say this comment to you, and then I'm going to ask you a question. So Evan Novella says, Jess sounds either depressed or pissed at Rand. Are you depressed or pissed at me, Jess?
Why?
I don't know. He said that. But so you said...
That's just my natural tone of voice. I'm just constantly depressed.
So you said you're still not confident that Microsoft is going to be able to do the games thing.
I need to see it, man. You had the Red Ring of Death, blah blah blah, and then, you know, when the Xbox, they bought the Xbox Elite, the Xbox 360 Elite, and that still had the Red Ring of Death issue, I think, in some cases, and then they bought out the Xbox 360S, which had the updated design, but it didn't Red Ring of Death, but my God, did it run hot. You know,
yeah.
But the confidence was growing, you know.
So when would you become a believer in the new studios that Microsoft bought? Does it have to be more than just Ninja Theory puts out a really good game, Playground's second game, whatever it is amazing? Would then you be like, okay, that's, I think they made good decisions? Or does it have to be more than that? Like, do you already expect Playground Games' next game to be great because they're a great studio? Or Ninja Theory's next game is going to be great because they put out great content previously? Is it like one of those off chances, like Compulsion Games, a studio that's made two games that are very mediocre, suddenly they put out something good? Like, when is it more like you're going to look at it from an individual, like, studio perspective? Like,
the way I'm going to look at it, I mean, it's literally what Satya Nadella said, and it feels to me like what he said is basically something that is taken straight out of a meeting, you know, with Microsoft executives. Like, maybe they're all like, yeah, we need to be in the Netflix of gaming. If they want to be in the next Netflix of gaming, they need at least one flagship show every year.
That's true.
And they need, I'm not talking about Call of Duty popcorn entertainment, you know. You can have your games as a service for that sort of thing.
So you think they need Halo?
They need a headline act. They need one headline act every year before I'll consider them the Netflix of gaming. And maybe that's completely unrealistic. Maybe it is. But the fact of the matter is, that's what Netflix does, man. They have, like, I mean, Netflix goes even beyond that, but it's probably logistically simpler to make a TV show than it is a big flagship AAA game. And maybe it's unrealistic to expect they can really nail a big, great AAA release every year. But Sony had Spider-Man and God of War in the space of 1 year. So maybe it isn't that unrealistic.
Well, and there's also the possibility Sony's going to have Death Stranding and Last of Us 2 in the space of 1 year or what. Yeah, I mean, do you need multiples? Would it be best to have a big AAA in the beginning of the year and a big AAA at the end of the year? Like,
yeah. You got to spice them out, right?
I do think Microsoft needs to shake off this. There's this kind of stereotype, or maybe not stereotype, but like
stigma.
Perspective. Yeah, stigma that Microsoft, the only good games Microsoft makes are racing games, which, I mean, it's been true for the last couple of years. Like, you can count on Forza to be great. But when it comes down to everything else, it's like, maybe they haven't put their best foot forward. So they need to stake that stigma where it's like, people say, Microsoft makes great racing games, right? Whereas, like, that stigma needs to come off and just Microsoft makes great games. Like, Halo Infinite needs to be amazing. Gears 5 needs to be amazing. The Initiative's new game has to be great. Ninja Theory has to put out great content. And once that all starts to happen, if it does happen, I hope it does, I think that stigma will change, and from Microsoft only makes great racing games to, hey, Microsoft is putting out damn good content. But I mean, not on the last two. I mean, I've said it before, last 2 years for Xbox has been bad for me. I'll say for me, I don't want to speak for anybody else. Okay. Like, yes, and I played all the third-party games. I played more games than most people out there. Like, the exclusive games from Microsoft the last 2 years have been incredibly lackluster. But I do think that going forward, and yeah, it'd be like, wait for next gen. I know how ridiculous and stupid that sounds. I even hate saying it myself. But, you know, Microsoft clearly saw a weakness in whatever they were doing and decided to do something about it. I don't know. You know what I mean? So, I don't know what else to say. I forgot even what I was talking about, honestly, there. I'm kind of reading chat, and I'd appreciate it if everybody does not take personal chat attacks at other people. If I see personal attacks, especially from a mod, I will demod you. So, I don't like people taking personal shots at one another. So that be a warning. Now, a friend of mine, before we get into the next topic, a friend of mine sent me a bunch of codes for a game on Steam, right? Legendary codes, too. So it unlocks everything in the game. So he wanted me to give it away on the podcast, and I told him I would. And really quickly, the game is... Switchblade. It's a car game. Oh, let me get the information here, right?
Switchblade. It's a competitive car game.
Yes, it's a 5v5 vehicular combat MOBA game by Lucid Game, who makes games like Geometry Wars. A whole bunch of staff is ex-Bizarre Creations, who did PGR. Now, I have five codes for the starter pack and legendary pack. Starter packs unlock stuff in the game. It's free to play, but unlocks some cars. The legendary pack unlocks everything in the game. So I have five codes. So I figured, you know what? If you are listening to this and you really want to try this game out, the first five people to DM me on Twitter, I will give you the codes. So just my DMs are open. Just hit me up in DMs asking for the code for Switchblade, and I'll give you the starter pack and the legendary pack. First five people, I will give you the codes. So yeah, I will send those codes out after the podcast is over.
For those who aren't watching the podcast live, we'll probably come up with a better mechanism for doing giveaways as a result of the podcast for people who aren't watching live.
That is
so
true.
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
But this one's just for the live.
Yeah. So, okay. What to talk about next? Oh yes. EA. EA.
Yay.
Man,
you can't talk about EA without sighing. I'm looking forward to the day where I can be really happy with EA, but will that day ever come, Rand?
I don't know. So EA, according to Jason Schreier and a few other people, they canceled yet another Star Wars game.
Oof.
Which was the game that they was, which was the Visceral. So when they shut down Visceral Games, Amy Hennig's Star Wars game, they moved it to, I think, EA Vancouver or EA Motive or something. And then it got canceled, and then they canceled it like right again. So it's like, Jez, is it just me, or has EA just completely dropped the ball when it comes to the Disney license?
I mean, you had Gary Witter, who wrote Rogue One, I believe, the Star Wars Rogue One. He's a gamer, and he said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, if I was Disney, I'd be pissed at the way EA has handled this license. And I saw a lot of people say that. They're like, Disney cannot be happy with how, like, EA has kind of squandered its exclusivity on console, AAA console Star Wars games. You know, there are still like mobile games and stuff that aren't made by EA, but like as far as console games and the, you know, big AAA PC games are made, it's EA or nothing. EA has the exclusive license, and I can't remember how much they paid for it, but it was a lot of money. And they've pretty much only made three mixed reception shooters so far. One of which incurred the greatest negative PR for video games in a damn long time.
Yeah, that's true.
Which obviously Disney doesn't like negative PR attached to any of its licenses. So I would say they pretty much haven't dropped the ball, man. They've dropped the Death Star. They've dropped the BB-8, and it's blown up on the floor begging for help. And can they salvage it, man? Is this just impossible to salvage at this point? You've got what projects are still in development? You've got Time for Respawn Entertainment's project, right?
What was that? I was just taking care of something.
Oh, sorry, I'm saying like what Star Wars projects are still actually officially in development? We've got like the Respawn Entertainment game, Jedi Fallen Order, right?
Mm-hmm. Jedi Fallen Order, they got that coming out this holiday. Yep.
Presumably Battlefront 3. Third time's a charm, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're still updating Battlefront 2. Count Dooku came out today, I think. And General Grievous came out. And apparently, you know, I will say one thing for EA. Their post-launch support of Battlefront 2 has actually been pretty good.
Yeah, it has been, but I mean, like, I don't know, like that whole debacle with the loot boxes and stuff really.
they just ruined it. It's like, yeah. It's like if they'd just not done that and had cosmetic DLC or cosmetic microtransactions or whatever, and just stuck with that, none of this would have happened, probably. You know,
No, definitely wouldn't have. But like, do you think when Disney inked this deal, now, do you think, all right, let me ask you this, because I've had a couple conversations with people. Do you think Disney cares, number one, or is Disney fine with just getting whatever amount of money that EA paid them? Because a canceled game, nobody's going to see. It's not like it tarnishes Star Wars brand, right? Star Wars Battlefront, you could argue, tarnished it a little bit. But like a canceled Star Wars game they never showed doesn't really negatively affect the brand. So is Disney just okay with whatever amount of money EA paid them? Or does Disney actually want to see great content put out from EA on a regular basis to help improve the Star Wars brand? I mean, where do you fall on that line? Are you fine with people saying Disney doesn't give a shit? Or does Disney care?
It's really hard to say. You know, I mean, I'm sure if Disney really cared that much, probably wouldn't have closed down LucasArts, right? Like, they probably would be trying to make their own games.
But, yeah, but that's kind of hard, right? Like, the whole reason they did that was, like, it's hard making your own games. So they figured, like, we'll go with EA, and they can make games for us. And I don't know, like, I can see that's both.
The problem with EA is they are fundamentally, right now, the idea of what a Star Wars game should be is fundamentally at odds with the way EA wants to run its business. EA, it doesn't feel like EA wants single-player games anymore. Like, when's the last single player game they put out? Mirror's Edge, and Mirror's Edge. I can't even remember what the subtitle was now. Alice.
I mean, like a strictly a single player game.
Yeah, I mean, like, but that's what you want out of Star Wars. That's what Battlefront 1 was criticized for, that they had the Star Wars license and they didn't really leverage the universe, and it was just this sort of shallow multiplayer experience that was hyper casual and just wasn't the kind of, it didn't use the license to its full potential. And that's why, like, in Battlefront 2, we had a fairly passable-ish campaign, which wasn't
True.
terrible, but it wasn't like it wasn't groundbreaking, but at least it was something, But like, EA is like, they don't seem to want to make single player games anymore.
No, because it
And
probably doesn't make them a lot of money. So, which is kind of weird that Respawn Game is a probably a single player game, or co-op game at best, right? Maybe I don't know. I don't know what. See, the thing is, a lot of us speculate on what the contract was between Disney and EA. Like, we don't know. Like,
we
we don't
don't.
know if they if EA has to hit a certain quota of Star Wars games by a certain amount of time. They have to be a certain like Metacritic average. If there's like an out clause, which there probably
I
is in
would
a big contract like this, you know.
I would assume that Disney's probably they probably don't care, and that really it's more about like Disney are probably like, we've got our money from selling them the license. Now, they probably will get some form of royalty payments from any game that EA makes. But ultimately, it's EA who aren't making their money back from what for whatever they're paid. So, like, it should be like, ultimately, EA is the one that should be worried more than anything, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sure, it's like, yeah, Disney's probably losing whatever royalties they agreed to as part of this deal. And I'm sure that in a perfect world, Disney would like, at least one great Star Wars game every couple of years at the least. Or, considering that they had so many studios
I mean,
making working on projects, but.
it's such a big franchise that you would want Star Wars games out at least once a year. And not only like the big like multiplayer games, because I mean I love Star Wars, like Star Wars Battlefront, like multiplayer, that sounds amazing. But then I also want the single player stuff, which is what they're doing with Respawn. And Gary Whitta, who wrote Rogue One, said he's seen some of the canceled gameplay of the Star Wars game, or the canceled Star Wars gameplay. He says it was magnificent. It was like Uncharted in Star Wars, and that he feels that it was the whole brand has been completely like mismanaged, like horrifically. So
Thing is, man, it's like, but it's like, how can you say? I'm not saying he's wrong, but at the same time, it's kind of like if you see like a vertical slice or something, how can you say it's going to be on Uncharted's level when it becomes a finished product, And maybe they were going for it to be Uncharted, but in reality, could they have got it to that level? And clearly, EA feels like they couldn't have done.
yeah.
He ain't a game dev, ultimately.
Yeah.
So,
So
I wanna believe that EA made the right decision, but it's also hard to think that about EA, considering all the terrible things they've done and do. So, yeah, it is what it is, man. I personally think that Disney itself is struggling with the Star Wars license. Like Solo didn't meet expectations in terms of box office sales, which led to them canceling the entire Expanded Universe movie lineup they had planned. And you also have The Last Jedi having the mixed reception. And as a result of that, Episode 9 is probably not going to do as well. So, it seems like it just seems like it's a hard license to work with and deliver on what those expectations might be. Maybe I'm talking crap, I don't know.
yeah. You
You
don't
don't want
know.
to piss them fans off, man. So, it is what it is.
MPDs, Jez, from December.
MPD.
NPDs. So, they put out this stuff for December. and like all the best selling games and all that stuff. And man, Switch absolutely killed it. But first, Carlos Crespin says, EA is ruining Star Wars like they ruined the 007 games. Shout out to you for the super chat. That is true. They had the 007 license at one point.
Really?
That I didn't know that. At one point, wait, actually, I'm thinking. Yeah, at one point, they did have the 007 license.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah. Then I think Activision had it, or I forget, like, the license hold that went through. But at one point, yeah, they had it. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, license, you don't really see a lot of licensed games anymore. So...
That's the thing, like, licensed games in general, they had their own stigma. Like, I'd see a licensed game and just assume straight away it was going to be trash, that some company was trying to make a quick cash in. And you still get those kind of games, right? Like, Platinum Games put out a Transformers game, which was basically a cash in on the name and not actually very good. And yeah. Didn't they also do that with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Or was someone else?
Platinum Games made that. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, again, like that game wasn't particularly well received either. So it's like you get these licensed games that just end up like trash, and it just makes me assume all licensed games are kind of trash. But then the Arkham Batman games kind of changed things, right?
They sure did. They absolutely 100% did.
They sort of created this idea that a licensed game could be actually good. And then you got Spider-Man, which everyone adores. I still haven't played it myself yet. I need to get through The Last of Us first, but you know, they've pushed the idea of what a licensed game should be. So you, who knows, man? Maybe EA saw what Spider-Man did and just thought, you know what? We need to do better than this because people expect more from licensed games now. You know?
Yeah. So really quickly, the MPD stuff, then we'll talk about Crackdown's marketing or lack thereof marketing. So Red Dead Redemption 2 is the best-selling video game of all of 2018, Jez. First time a non-Call of Duty game was number one since 2013.
I'm so happy about this, purely because it's a single-play game. Yeah, I know it's got the online mode and stuff like that, but it's like it books the trend, right, that a game has to be... It has to be a certain way to sell on Call of Duty's level. And Rockstar have basically proven the opposite. And yeah, there's a question over Red Dead Redemption 2 about what did it cost, you know? Did like is the working conditions that to put up with worth it and stuff like that. And I don't know what it's like working at Rockstar, personally. I haven't been there. You know, the account, we've got mixed accounts. We've got conflicting accounts of how bad conditions were for people who worked on that game. But what it's resulted in is a timeless piece of art and entertainment that beat Call of Duty, which is all that matters. But no, it kind of just bodes well for single player right. games, I think.
No, it does. It does. I mean, also it's Rockstar though. So it's like, you know, how much did that play into it? But Nintendo Switch was the best-selling video game console in both units and dollars for 2018. It was also the best-selling system of December. It sold 1.77 million units in December, which was like the highest December of this entire gen. Supposedly, judging by these leaked numbers, the Xbox One actually outsold the PS4 for December. Xbox One sold like 930,000, and the PS4 sold 790,000. Now, the Xbox was also heavily discounted during the month of December, and PlayStation really wasn't. So they both saw kind of steep. Yeah. They both saw like steep year over year declines for December. I think both PlayStation and Xbox are in for a rough 2019 hardware sales wise. I think the
Fortnite got lunch eaten by Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. I think the Fortnite effect is largely over for hardware, which was driving a lot of it in the early year, you know, the early months. I think this is the beginning of the end. Like, we know next gen systems are coming, but some were like, oh, you know, the PlayStation is still selling great, which it is, but like that, you know, the drop that it just saw for December, same with Xbox, is like, yeah, this gen is over. Like 2019 is going to be rough for both of them.
That's normal though, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, I mean, we are.
This is what happens.
We are going into the what? The sixth year, right? Right. So it'll be roughly sixth or fifth year. So yeah, I mean, it's getting there. What else? I want to like just briefly go over the top 20 selling games of the year. Let me find this information. Let's see here. Top 20 games. Got so much.
By the way, if you're interested in the sales stuff and you know the business aspects of it, you should follow Matt Piscatella on
Twitter.
I pronounced his name right. You should follow him on Twitter because he really does provide an insane amount of high quality breakdowns on all of this stuff in easy to digest form.
Yeah.
If you're like me and you hate reading articles, which is weird because I write articles.
You write articles all the time.
Yeah, I hate reading. And I never read them, but I read tweets, and Matt's tweets are great.
Yeah.
So make sure you follow.
And I normally, the only reason we're talking about it on the podcast is because normally I just do a video about this, but I was playing Resident Evil 2, so I didn't want to make a video because I was playing greatness. So top 20 selling games for 2018, Red Dead Redemption 2, Black Ops 4, NBA 2K19, Madden NFL 19, Smash Brothers Ultimate, 1 month on sale, the fifth best-selling game of 2018.
That's incredible. Crazy.
Marvel Spider-Man, number sixth. Like, another exclusive that high up, number sixth. Far Cry 5. Spider-Man on one console outsold Far Cry 5, which came out in March on multiple consoles and PC, outsold Far Cry 5. God of War 2018 for eight. Like, that's, like, the performance of Smash Bros. Ultimate, Spider-Man, and God of War is extremely impressive to me.
Did Forza make the chart?
No, Forza did not make the top 20. Monster Hunter World, number 9. I think that's really impressive.
Are we sure? It is worth noting that they don't include digital, right?
Yes, they do, 100%. They don't include digital for Nintendo games, but digital is included for Sony and Microsoft games and everybody else, except for Bethesda. So...
yeah.
Yes. Assassin's Creed Odyssey was 10. Grand Theft Auto 5 was 11. Grand Theft Auto 5, number 11. Game's been out since 2014. Still doesn't stop selling. Mario Kart 8, 12. FIFA 19. Battlefield 5 at 14. Wow. Battlefield 5, number 14. What a drop that saw, like considering how successful Battlefield 1 was. Super Mario Odyssey at 15. World War II, Call of Duty at 16. Dragon Ball FighterZ, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild at 18, Super Mario Party, and then Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu at top 20. Now, at the Xbox, he did give us the top 10 for Xbox for 2018. Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Red Dead 2, Madden, NBA 2K19, Far Cry 5, PUBG, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Monster Hunter World, Forza Horizon 4, and Battlefield 5. But on PlayStation, it was Red Dead Redemption 2, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Spider-Man, God of War, NBA, Madden, Far Cry, Monster Hunter, Assassin's Creed, and FIFA. What?
Surprised Forza was that low.
I mean, Forza was in the same position in 2016 for Forza Horizon 3. It was number 9. Forza Horizon 4 comes in at number 9. I don't know. We don't know the sales. They did just announce 7 million players for Forza Horizon 4. So... okay.
It goes back to our conversation. We had a conversation about it's just a racing game on the last podcast, right?
It is just a racing game, yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, it is just a racing game. So it's like one of those things where it's like, if you're not really into racing games, do you want to play it? It's also on Game Pass. So, who knows how much is sold? I mean,
do you think Game Pass could be skewing some of these figures against Microsoft?
Well, no. So Matt Piscatella says, like, from the stuff he's seen, that Game Pass doesn't affect sales at all. It actually helps sales. So, yeah, I don't know. As the phone continues to ring, as it always does, one of my family members is in the hospital, or at least got admitted to the hospital. So no wonder a lot of people are calling the house. So
sorry to hear, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know much about it. It happened during the podcast, so I'll have to find out more information later. So talk about Crackdown 3 real fast, and then we'll take some questions. Jez, we got Crackdown 3 coming out in a couple weeks, right? Coming out February 15th. Releasing against Far Cry 5, or Far Cry New Dawn, Metro Exodus, Jump Force. I think those are the games coming out that week. And then, of course, Anthem, the big game, coming out the week after that. Are you surprised by the utter lack of marketing that the game has shown so far? Are you surprised by how little we've seen of Crackdown so far? Or are they waiting for Inside Xbox to start the marketing campaign? Are they hoping positive previews from the press, which I saw Joseph Staten says he was, you know, getting ready to show the game off? And what are your thoughts on that, man? Because I do have some thoughts of my own, but...
Well, I will say that there are previews coming up, and I think we're slated to do another preview of the game soon. So there is going to be Crackdown footage coming shortly. But even with that preview wave, it doesn't feel like the kind of pre-launch marketing that a big AAA exclusive would have. I think that's fair.
Wait, what did you say?
I said it doesn't feel like the big AAA marketing that you'd expect it to have. Like, it feels muted.
It does feel really muted, right? But does that coincide with how Microsoft views the game itself? Like, they're not giving it a good, you know, Halo or Gears of War marketing approach because they don't expect much out of Crackdown? You know what I mean? Or are they expecting people to just like, it's Game Pass, what does it matter? Is like Game Pass just like part of the marketing of the game? So it's like, we don't really need to do heavy marketing on TV and YouTube ads and stuff because Game Pass will do all the marketing for us. Like,
well, we can examine like, what was the marketing like for Forza Horizon 4? That was like a lot stronger, right? That was a game they were confident in.
True, only after they completely screwed the pooch on Forza Horizon 3, though, remember?
Yep, that's true.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, Crackdown 3 is weird for me, right? Because at one point you talk about Phil saying that he wants it to be a pillar of, like, Xbox. But then I don't see the marketing, the messaging, and the coverage of a game to befit a title that is a pillar of Xbox. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, that's how I put it. It's like I said, it doesn't feel like the marketing cycle for a AAA game.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And I don't know, maybe it's because we haven't really seen a big AAA game from Microsoft in a long time that actually had marketing up the wazoo like Halo normally gets or Gears of War. It's been like years, like since Gears of War 4 in 2016. So it's been over 2 years. So I don't know how, like, is this Microsoft's new marketing thing? Are they trying to save money on the fact, like, maybe because they gave more money to Sumo and whoever else to finish the game that ate into their marketing budget? So they don't have enough or as much money to market the game. Is it not worth marketing the game because there's so many other games coming out the same day? So it's just kind of like, we'll just cut our losses and just hope Game Pass does enough for us. I don't really know. Are they waiting to give out review codes to influencers and have them talk about the game and hope that they say great things about it and how it's fun to play? You know?
Well, you know, maybe there's, if they feel like they're going to make a loss on this game, which given the lengthy development, they probably are. Maybe they're thinking like, we can use this as a way to experiment with the way we market it, you know? And it does feel like they've done it in a different sort of way. Like, market it as a flagship Game Pass game or something. I don't know. There's still time.
There is still time. I don't know. I still want to hope that Crackdown's going to be good. I'm still looking forward to it. I'm just I don't know, some of the decisions with the game and the marketing have kind of scratched my head a little bit, but one last thing before we take it over for questions. Halo. So they're teasing some sort of news in like March, Jez, right? Or something?
Yeah.
About Master Chief Collection?
Yeah, some esports event for Halo in March, and they also teased big news for the Master Chief Collection in March, which in my mind pretty much can only mean one thing.
What do you think it means? Is Master Chief Collection coming to PC finally, Windows 10?
Yes.
I mean, it's not a surprise.
I thoroughly expect that that is what's the big news, is that it's coming to PC.
I would expect Master Chief Collection is coming to PC. Now, the big question, I know a lot of people will be like, yeah, it's coming to PC, but hell no, I don't want to use the Windows 10 store. Do you think Master Chief Collection will come to Steam?
It's tough to say. I want to say probably not, because, well, I don't want to say that. I would prefer that it did come to Steam, but I don't think it will, because they do want the store to be good, and for the store to be good, it needs good content, and it's not going to have good content if they keep putting it on Steam. And also, there's also this whole thing where Master Chief Collection is a complicated game with overlapping server infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. Maybe it's just better suited for the Windows Store because they won't have to like screw around with all the APIs and all that sort of stuff. I don't know, but I wouldn't expect it to be hitting Steam, which is a shame. I know.
But yeah, if you want to sell the most copies of the game and get it the most reach as possible and make Halo as big as it possibly could be, you put it on Steam. Oh, you put it on the Epic Store. You put it on Windows 10. But as we've discussed before, it's more about getting people used to the ecosystem. And Halo Master Chief Collection, but more likelihood, Halo Infinite, is Microsoft's last best chance to really make a dent in Windows 10's gaming, right? So it's like,
I think it's their last chance. I mean, you have to. There is another reason why I'm pretty sure this Halo Master Chief thing is coming to the Windows 10 store. Literally last week, Microsoft Insider program started taking feedback specifically on how they can improve the gaming experience on Windows 10. Like, they're doing that because they probably expect that there's going to be an influx of people jumping on the Windows 10 store soon. And everyone, you know, the Windows 10 store is such a point of hatred for that platform. That's the number one thing. If Halo Master Chief Collection isn't coming to Steam, and I don't think it is, they need to fix that damn store and make it less bloody horrible for core PC gamers who have certain expectations. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I agree. I'm not saying like Halo Infinite's the next, like the last great hope. I mean, there's always like the Initiative's games and whatever they're doing for next gen, but like, clearly, Microsoft was using Xbox games to try to get people to play it on Windows 10, right? That was the incentive. Like, we need to use this to get people to try it out here. But, like, I'm sorry, none of those games are as big as Halo. Gears isn't as big as Halo. Sea of Thieves is, I mean, they're not even in the same, like, room. Like, Halo is massive. Sure, it's not as massive as it once was, but I mean, it's been on PC before, and people have been clamoring for it on PC. So, like, you release Halo Infinite, which more than likely is going to be your biggest game, like, for the next, I don't know, what, 4 years? Like, I can't see another game from Microsoft potentially, like, that is the biggest game, right? Like, if you look at Sony, Last of Us is their Halo, or Halo is, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's Halo for Microsoft, and then there's literally everything else underneath it. Halo is Xbox. Xbox is Halo, you know? So to me, it's like, that is their biggest chance of getting people to try out the Windows 10 store to get, actually enjoy it, and then stay for, you know, if they got Game Pass on Windows 10 by then, which probably they will be, because that's 2 years from now or whatever.
Well, this is what I'd do if I was Microsoft. I would announce Master Chief Collection, but then don't release it until the store's been refreshed or upgraded, or you've made a separate store or something, because what's there right now does not leave a good impression. And if Halo comes to the Windows 10 store and that's the state the store is in when people get there for the first time, they ain't going to have a good impression.
So no, that's true.
If I was them, I wouldn't release it until the store's been at least upgraded to some degree.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they need to fix that store. It's all my PC friends who play it said it's horrible. You know, like,
functionally, it works. Like, at a purely basic functional level, it downloads the games, and that's it. But it's just not a pleasant experience. Like, it's not as good as Steam. It doesn't have the same curation as Steam, the same content of Steam, the same sort of search functionality of Steam. Like, finding things on the Windows Store is a pain. Today I was trying to find a PDF reader, because by default PDFs open in Microsoft Edge, and it's terrible. You know, the PDF reader in Edge is terrible. So I was trying to find a PDF reader, and I just couldn't find one that wasn't blatant crapware. And the only one that I could find was Adobe Reader for Windows 8. So it was like, it was just an awful experience. And I was looking for a PDF reader, something so basic. So when it comes to games, it's just even worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's a game that released on the Windows Store recently that I was surprised about. Let me see if I can find it real quick. So if you go on like new PC games, yeah. There's a link. If you go on the Microsoft Store and you go to games, the second thing you see is Gummy Drop, which is Match 3 Candy Crush ripoff. And beneath that is Forza Horizon 4 and Guacamelee 2, which are legitimate games. Like, can't they somehow detect from what I've purchased that I ain't interested in goddamn Candy Crush, and then just not show it to me? Like, can't they do that? Aren't they like the biggest software company in the world? It's that kind of basic stuff that they can't do, which is why PC gamers hate the Windows Store. And it's that kind of basic stuff that they need to fix if they don't want to be seen as a total joke.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah,
here's my rant for the day.
Jez's rant. Hit us up with some questions, guys. We'll answer a few before we get on out of here. So hopefully everybody enjoyed the podcast. Before you guys all leave, would appreciate you hitting the like button if you enjoyed it. And hey, if you didn't like it, hit the dislike button. Make sure you leave a comment below when this video finishes processing. Really appreciate everybody taking the time out to chat with us, whether it's here live on YouTube or later on in, you know, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you listen to it. We appreciate it. And Gunstar has a question already. He says, which big game release will be the biggest victim in the avalanche of games coming in quarter one? Now, that is a good question. There are tons of games coming out in quarter one. So we have... So do you have one off the top of your head already?
One off the top of the head for quarter one. So like January through...
So January, through February, March, yeah.
I think Far Cry New Dawn, actually.
Ooh, that's interesting. Far Cry New Dawn. Okay.
And as I said, you might have been thinking I was going to say Crackdown, but I think like Game Pass is going to buoy Crackdown.
I wasn't going to say Crackdown either. Okay. This one might surprise you. I'm going to say Metro Exodus.
No.
And that's the one I'm most looking forward to after Resident Evil. But I also look at it as like Resident Evil is a surefire hit. Kingdom Hearts is probably a surefire hit too, right? Big franchises. Crackdown has Game Pass to save it. Far Cry is also a huge franchise. It's bigger than Metro, right? I don't think a lot of people have played Metro 2033 or Last Light. No, so it's easier to skip on Metro. I think Anthem's going to do gangbusters. I think Devil May Cry will do well. Division 2 is going to do fantastic. And Sekiro, I honestly do think it's Metro. And I think it was smart for Sony for moving Days Gone to April. They should have moved Metro out of there as well, right?
Metro actually moved its launch date up. Forward.
I know. They should have moved to February 8th. I love Metro. I love the Metro series. I'm playing that day one, but I just have the sinking feeling that is the one game out of all those quarter one games that's just people are going to, it's single player. People are going to be like, eh, I can play these other games. I'll come back to it when it's on sale, or eh, I haven't played the other two and this is a continuation, so I'm not going to play this one, you know? Mm. So Face23BKNY says, with the latest PS5 rumor with the SoC CPU leak, don't it feel like we're closer to PS5 release than the next Xbox? I mean, unless you're saying that the PS5 is coming March of 2020 and the next Xbox is coming holiday 2020, I don't think the next PlayStation is coming this year. If PlayStation 5 was 2019, they wouldn't have skipped E3. They'd be
no way.
So it's 2020. Now the question is, like, is it March? I don't know. Is it the end of the year? We don't know yet. I guess we'll see how they, you know, how this year pans out for them. But it wouldn't shock me either way with PlayStation. I wouldn't shock me if they launched in March or if they launched in the holidays. I would be shocked, however, if Xbox launched in March. I think that's a sure bet for holiday, right?
I think Xbox is definitely holiday.
Yeah. So DI Almighty Spartan God says he wants to know when he will be respected by viewers as a mod or not one. I don't know. I mean, some people like who they like. I don't know. People always fight and stuff. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, there are people that don't respect me either, bro. It's like, I used to see some of the comments I get in my videos. Not everybody's always going to respect you, no matter how respectful you are towards them. I mean, if you're talking stuff, you know, talking shit, you know, you're going to get shit talked back to you. People aren't going to like you. This is kind of how it is. But not everybody respects everybody else. I try to respect everybody, but, you know, it's hard for people to respect everybody. But the monkey wants to know, question, Xbox Inside on February 5th, what do you expect? I expect Sea of Thieves info about the arena and what they're coming after arena. I expect a rundown of Crackdown 3, single player, and a hefty showing of multiplayer. Probably Game Pass news, right? Because that's the beginning of February. I would imagine they talk about Game Pass a little bit. Anything else, Jez? I can't imagine, like, Ori is going to get a release date during Inside Xbox, right? I mean, what do you expect from an Inside Xbox in February?
I don't have huge expectations. I do expect Maverick. If Maverick still exists and it's a thing that's going to happen, they might announce it at Inside Xbox, because I had originally heard that Maverick was planned for a January announcement, which to me said CES, but CES is gone now. But maybe that got pushed back, or maybe they canceled it altogether, which is something Microsoft does sometimes. So who knows? I could see Maverick being shown off there with the diskless drive. If they push ahead with it.
Mike Major Nelson busting out the white gloves once more, you know, touching that diskless Xbox. But yeah, I could totally see that happening. Let's see what else we got here. Mighty Ryan wants to know, do you have any more gamer score goals, or are you content with 1 million? I'm content with 1 million. Like, I don't, like, gamer score has changed. Okay. Like,
war has it's, changed.
The gamer score has completely changed from when I first started doing it. It is so ridiculously easing. Now it's not even funny. And I know, and I agree, gamer score is essentially meaningless. All it shows is, you know, you play a lot of games. Right now it's even more meaningless than it was before, because all the ID at Xbox program is absolutely great, but they allow some content in there that can be awful, and a lot of that content is also really short, so you can get 1,000 gamer score in 10 minutes. So I'm happy with the 1.2 million I got. I doubt I'll get to 1.3 million. Could I get to 2 million if I really wanted to? Of course. It's ridiculously easy. It's just, I don't really care anymore. I cared for a long time, I just don't care anymore. Jazz, do you have any gamer score goals? Or
nope. I don't even have a single game at 1,000, I think.
Okay.
I like when achievements pop and it's fun and stuff, but I don't seek them out. I just think, oh, that's nice, and then forget it happened. Like there's some cool achievements in Resident Evil 2, actually. You get an achievement for shooting off Torrent's hat. You get an achievement for shoving a grenade in a zombie's mouth and then shooting it.
Hmm.
So give that a try. There's a few cool achievements like that.
Yeah.
Be lenient. And speedrunning achievements, obviously. The game's pretty much set up for speedrunning. You can see your playtime right from the pause menu.
That is definitely... Well, because there's also, I think, an achievement for beating that in a certain amount of time. Eternal Shaddai, shout out to you for the super chat. He says, if Resident Evil 2 becomes successful in sales as a remake, do you see Dino Crisis having the same treatment as Resident Evil 2 remake? Maybe, but if Resident Evil 2 is super successful, I think they remake Resident Evil 3.
I'm gonna tell you guys something now. I pretty much saw a Resident Evil 3 Easter egg tease in Resident Evil 2 when I was playing. So if you play the game, when you go to the gun shop, have a look around. If you're a Resident Evil veteran, have a look around at the other shops that are there. There is a pretty blatant Resident Evil 3 tease if you look for it. So I think the next game they do is Resident Evil 3. Like the AI for the tyrant that follows you around, that is perfect for Nemesis, man. They will definitely remake Resident Evil 3, I would say. And hopefully they'll do Veronica as well. And 4.
Yeah.
And 0.
I would like them to remake Dino Crisis.
Yeah, me too.
Cyril Snatch says, do you think the rumor the next Xbox will feature ray tracing? Will the spec be powerful enough to run at a 4K 60? I think the next Xbox will have ray tracing. I don't know if a game was going to be able to run 4K 60 with it. I do expect a lot of games to be 4K 60 next gen, but I don't expect it to really be the standard. I think devs will still shoot for 4K 30 with all the bells and whistles, but I do expect a lot of games to be more 60 frames, or at least the option to have 60 frames next gen, maybe like 1440p 60 or 1080p 60 or something. Jez, any thoughts on that?
It's really hard to say. You know, like, I'm sure Microsoft have data on what's the most popular sort of what people go for, what people want. Do people want frames over resolution? Like, what do devs want to? Do they want their games to look as good as they can, or do they want the frame rates? Like, for example, Resident Evil 2 has 60 frames per second, but you can just see that it sacrificed some stuff to get there. And I will say that, like, I have seen frame rate issues in Resident Evil 2. Like, if you're speed running, and it's loading up new areas quickly, it can make this frame rate tank. Actually, I was playing as Claire. And I was running from the tyrant, and I was like really, really running from the tyrant, like across the whole police station. And when I got to from one side to the other, it did start skipping frames a bit here and there. But you know, it's rare that you panic as hard as I panicked. I was playing that game because he was running faster, man. I was like in scenario 2, and he like runs faster in that scenario for some reason. But I don't know. But,
so, Dealer Gaming has a question. He says, Rand, what about the dev that has those X2 dev kits already? I already spoke about that. I already said anybody that says that and says there's an interview about a developer who has Xbox dev kits, I said that person's lying to you. And always to make sure to check the description of the video to see if there's a source. Usually, if there's no source, it means it's bullshit. So we already covered that, Dealer, and I talked about people lying. And I talked about how here on my channel, I don't lie. I always have sources for whatever I'm talking about. Now, the source may be a leak from Reddit where this person's saying something and I'm giving my opinion on whether it's fake or not. But I'm not the type of person to make up bullshit so I can make videos. So we already addressed that. Let's see. Gunstar wants to know my current gamer score. I think it's like 1.21 million or something. I don't know. Like, I could be at 1.3 million so fast. It's just not really, I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
If I could get like my World of Warcraft achievements for Xbox, I'd have like a bajillion,
You'd have a bajillion, yeah.
bajillion games coming.
Let's see. Eric Reyes wants to know, is Microsoft scared of PlayStation for the next generation console? Is Microsoft ready to take massive risk with their console and game exclusives? Are they scared of PlayStation?
No.
I
Microsoft
mean,
is the currently the richest company in the world. They ain't scared of PlayStation.
Microsoft is currently the richest. Are you saying team? Maybe the better question is Team Xbox scared of PlayStation? Because Xbox isn't the richest. Microsoft.
Well, they don't seem the kind of people to be scared. I mean, are they, concerned that they could get it all wrong? Probably. They can't like they've rested on their laurels before. And that's what happened with the Xbox One. You can guarantee they're not going to do that again,
I
right?
think they're watching them, seeing what they're doing, because you always got to see what your competition is up to. But I think Microsoft with an Xbox, since we know xCloud and streaming is a big thing, I think they're worried about Google and the potential impact it might have on their business and Amazon if they choose to get in, and Tencent. I think Xbox is more scared about them than they are about PlayStation.
They're worried about the cloud angle because that is their core business. Cloud is their core business, right? And if you get like if you get a company like Tencent pulling an exclusive deal with Google or something, that would scare them 10 times more than anything PlayStation could ever do. Unless like you had PlayStation doing an exclusive deal with Amazon for streaming. I think PlayStation now actually does run on Amazon servers right now. But like imagine if Amazon said they were gonna put like their streaming tech into their data centers or whatever, and all PlayStation games would be available on it as an exclusive, and Xbox games wouldn't be available on it, blah blah blah. Maybe that's the kind of thing that would scare them. But I don't think the console industries, they kind of see it as peaked, right? And yeah, we get like the NPD stuff has said that it's growing, but it's not growing anywhere near as fast as mobile. It's not growing anywhere near as fast as like service type games. And that's ultimately where they want to be, is selling you the service. They don't want to be selling you the console necessarily. It sounds like a contradiction, right? But if they can sell you the service without selling you the console, that's actually better margins in a crazy way.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that is all of the questions we have for now. OBJ says Google and Amazon ain't gonna make a dent in the console gaming business. Shout out to
Of
you,
course
brother.
not.
You never know. You never know what the future holds. Google does have a ton of money.
Console business? No.
Probably not. The console business? No. Streaming? Yeah. Like I said, like Microsoft, I don't know, Microsoft and PlayStation might desert, or Xbox and PlayStation might diverge more later on. Like I think Microsoft is really counting on PC and and streaming to really grow, whereas PlayStation still might stay more rooted in the console. But
PlayStation's exploring like VR and enhancing the experience you've got now, which is great, But Microsoft's looking at like, they're just looking at playing to their strengths, right? They're thinking we've got all these data centers. What could we put in them that complements Xbox? And obviously for them, it's cloud servers, They've got the technology, they've got the know-how, they've got the developer relationships, and they've got the will to do it, so it's just a case of why not, really, at this point.
yeah. But anyways, guys, thank you very much for watching the show. I greatly appreciate it. If you enjoyed it, make sure you hit the like button. Make sure you follow Jez on Twitter. All the links are in the description. The link to his Twitter, my Twitter, Xbox Live, the links to the SoundCloud and the iTunes if you want to listen to this later instead of live. We just appreciate everybody watching when they can. So Jez, what do you got going on for the rest of the week? Should we be looking forward to any articles from you?
Not really.
Not really. Not really. Jez is taking the week off. No articles from Jez. So
I'm working on a really big Xbox adaptive controller, but feature at the minute, but that's probably not going to be ready in the near term.
Right. And for all of you, all of you who DM me about that game on Steam, I'm going to give you guys your codes, the first five that message me. So if you don't hear, I'm going to respond to everybody, but it's just the first five. And I looked and I think I had 20. So yeah. Thanks guys for watching. And we'll see you next week for another show. Later.